We've been in Matthew 13, and we're wrapping up our little series on the parables. The reason Jesus spoke in parables, you know, there's two reasons to speak in parables, and they're wildly different. You can speak in parables in order to make something clear, or you can speak in parables to make something obscure. Jesus has told us in Matthew 13, he is actually more motivated in obscuring his lessons with parables. Hence we read in Matthew 13:34, Jesus says, "All these things Jesus said to the crowds in parables. Indeed, he said nothing to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken of by the prophet, 'I will open my mouth with parables. I will utter what has been hidden since the foundation of the world.'" I need to tell you something about Jesus. He must have been one of the more frustrating people to ever talk to in all of human history, because almost everything he said was from a next level. And there were times where he spoke plainly and people didn't get it, because he was always trying to get at something. And you never knew what he was after, and it must have been frustrating. Such that, and we'll find this in Matthew 16, at one point in time, Jesus makes it clear that he understands he's supposed to go to Jerusalem and get killed. And he has this sense of purpose. And once his disciples start to kind of understand who he is, when Peter confesses, "I think you're the Messiah," Jesus, first thing he does is says, "Be quiet with that, because you don't even know what it means yet. Because you're right, but you don't know." He said, "Because the Son of Man is going to go to Jerusalem and be turned over, and he will be killed, and on the third day be raised. I missed the grammar. But what he essentially said is, "Guys, you think you know what the Messiah is, and you recognize the Messiah, but you don't know what kind of Messiah." What kind of Messiah? Well, check this out. Verse 36, he says, "Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field.'" So that's the pattern. Jesus says the parable. Most people are like, "Whatever, it's not healing." Basically, Jesus is on TikTok a little bit, and a lot of people are scrolling. This is the problem with TikTok. I have ADHD, so it's perfect for me. And you literally scroll past about five things, and maybe something catches your attention, and then you kind of go, and then you look at it, and you laugh, and then you realize it's now a problematic meme, and so now you're ashamed of what you've laughed at, so you just keep swiping and tell nobody about it. And you just keep going, and something catches your vision. And this is our whole lives. This is our whole economy. This is our whole world. People are just doing whatever it takes to grab attention. Jesus isn't playing that game. We've seen he did a healing. "Oh, he healed that guy. That's interesting. Oh, he's talking parables, whatever." That's the whole relationship. That's the whole relationship most people have with Jesus. Some of them stayed. Went into the comments, "Who is this dude?" Saw him talking to these insane people on these comment sections extremely graciously and wisely and helpfully. So you DM him, you message him, you say, "You're on the next level, man. But I don't understand what you're talking about. Could you help me understand?" That's what Jesus does, the discipling. That's the discipleship. He talks in parables because about 1 in 10 people are going to hear the parable and think, "Well, he's doing these miracles, he's talking to these people wonderfully. I'm more interested in this guy being in charge of my life than him just healing." That's the point. He's on something different than I am, and I need to get on that wavelength. That's why the parables were the way they were. What's interesting then, if you go to 13:51, Jesus literally says to the disciples, after giving them many explicit and obvious, easy to understand parables about the kingdom of heaven, to make the kingdom clear, he says, "Have you understood these things?" Verse 51. The disciples said, "Yes." That is a rare moment in the Bible where the disciples are asked by Jesus, "Get it?" And they say, "Yes." And he says, "Yes, we do." Most of the time, they're like, who is this dude? What are you talking about? And he has to chide them. You have little faith. Most of the time, if you read Mark, I like Mark, but the disciples come off real dumb. And it's on purpose, because it was probably told, I believe, from the perspective of Peter, who was very hard on himself. For reasons. He was next to Jesus. Who's not going to be hard on yourself? How are you going to live your life knowing that you talked to Christ, you met him, and you have his spirit in you, you saw him die and raise, and you're going to tell the gospel, and you were there, and you're going to be like, yeah, I was there too, and I said this stupid thing. Have you ever met a celebrity, and all you could do is think about how dumb you looked? I've done that. I won't tell you a celebrity because you'll realize how much of a nerd I am. You know, Mike Portnoy. See, you guys don't even know. Progressive metal drummer from Dream Theater. Oh, I'm proud of it, though. It's a really cool thing that happened. Verse 51. He says, have you understood these things? They said to him, yes. And he said to them, therefore, every scribe. Scribes, remember, these are people of letters. These are people who are literate. These are scholars. He says, every scribe, every scholar who has been trained for the kingdom of heaven. So what kind of scholar we're talking about? We're talking about someone who has gotten kingdom vision, who gets it, who Jesus has trained. Every scholar, every scribe who's been trained for the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who brings out of his treasure what is new and what is old. I have a better analogy for us today. This is what Pastor did. Of course, Jesus' analogy was perfect at this time. I read that and I thought, I need to clean my garage. And I went down, I have two garages, I'm a blessed man. I have a top garage for cars, I have a bottom garage facing my backyard for all my tools and yard stuff and golf things that I bought to be good at golf and haven't used. A lot of dumb looking training aids. Now look, you can look dumb if you're trying to get good at golf. Real dumb, real fast. The kingdom of heaven, a scribe, is like someone who has gone into his garage and he's pulled out, if you go into my garage, you'll find a bandsaw. 100-something years old. It's awful. It moves when you use it. Like, it is the worst bandsaw. But it's awesome. I love it. I have it. That's my old treasure. I have also a $2,000 joiner made by Grizzly with those excellent bits. What are they called? They come in little, instead of having a single blade, it's got a bunch of little squares that you can, like carbide squares, you can loosen them and rotate them. So I don't have to change a blade. If I nick something, I just change that and I can make furniture. Guess how many times I've used it? Hey, listen, there's a tarp on it. My new treasure. I love it. But I look at all this stuff. There's so many stories. There's Lily's old bike that she's too big for. Old treasure. And then there's Lily's new bike that she's just big enough for. And she rides like a champ. And to be frank, it scares me. Because she don't feel fear anymore. She's silent. I'm a new person. Every day I go back and I look at all this crud in my garage and I realize I've changed. I haven't devalued the old. I haven't lost the old. But I see it differently now. And I realize what it does to serve what God is doing today. When I look through my baggage, I can tell the difference between something nonsense and something I probably should get rid of. But I've got it. And it's there, and I love it. And I think about it differently, because now I'm a scribe trained for the kingdom of heaven. So what Jesus is saying to the disciples very simply is, now that you've met me, you're trained to see the Bible differently. And now when you go to the Old Testament, you're going to recognize me in those pages. And you're going to realize that the way you were thinking about the kingdom of heaven, what you're expecting about the kingdom was wrong, and good for you, and you're relieved now. Now you know the kingdom of heaven starts small and grows. There's no pressure there. It grows naturally. It's going to happen. It's arriving. Quit running around. Quit looking for the next Messiah's return. Quit reading newspapers and coming up with algorithms or logarithmic formulas or whatever, trying to predict when Jesus will return. All this stuff Jesus is doing really powerful things to what? Take the heat off. How many buildings did Jesus build? He's a carpenter. He could build buildings. He could make tents. He could make booths. Think about this. Never once did he bother to sit down and actually create a theater so these people could see in the shade. Not enough time. Is it because of urgency? No, it's not worth it. We need to listen to me speak. I'll just get in a boat and I'll go off in the lake. We'll solve the problem. People will hear me. Take the heat off. Jesus didn't have to do major fundraising campaigns because his ministry was cheap, but it was powerful. That's a vision we should have for the future, I think. You look at me and you tell me, Carroll County, what's more likely? Are we going to strike oil or something? Do you think frack is going to move to Carrollton? No, this is about it. This is a town full of farming. We've got some other industry. And it's going to be like that for a long time. There is no lottery we're going to win as a town. But if we're going to make church happen, we're going to make church happen because we do it like Christ did. Cheap, efficient, kind, loving, powerful. When you look at the kingdom of heaven, when you look at the teachings of the Bible, do you see it differently now? Do you see your expectations for your life differently now? Now you know where you are is in the stage of growth in the kingdom, kind of waiting, and you got a little stuff to do. That's a chill place. That's kind of nice. You really should be able to very calmly and coolly and lovingly talk to friends. Talk to your friend. Take time to talk to your friend about Christ. Talk to your neighbor about Christ. They don't want to? Try to get in a week. But don't be weird about it. There's time. When I was growing up, the church believed in urgency. And it has driven me crazy. What if you died right now on the way home? Do you know you'd go to heaven? And I think, well, now I'm thinking about it. And then I would go to work a wreck. And I would talk to my friends, a manic wreck. And I would talk about Jesus as this character who's trying to lather me up and act like an idiot. Trying to make me this manic fool and embarrassment. Do you see Jesus? He is saying stuff. The time is short. The time is short, but we don't know how short. We're not supposed to be living anxiously. We're supposed to be living with focus. I have young children, you're all aware, they have focus problems. And oftentimes, I have to remind myself that I don't want to teach them urgency. I want to teach them focus. Focus is the ability to coolly think about what Christ is doing and get it done. What's the next thing I got to do? Let me pray for my neighbor. Sit down and pray. Take the time you need. This church is going to grow over time. There are miracles. Listen, I have to say something about revival. And this is my last note. I don't think revival ever happened in this country. How could it happen? If it happened, and if we're going to believe in it, then we're going to count something like four times it's happened in our country's history. Are you going to tell me God has taken this country to full-fledged revival four times in 200 years, and this is what it's like? Something was up with those revivals, I believe. Where was the staying power? There was a device in the Great Awakening that kind of birthed the disciples' movement. It's called the anxious pitch. Are you familiar with the idea? The anxious bench is developed by a guy named Charles Finney. He would, if you had a friend or a family member or he felt like someone was kind of thinking about it, he would put them on the front bench right there in front of them and preach directly to you and really lay it on. And the whole congregation knew that person, knew their whole life, and life was a lot more like a small town back then. Everyone knew that person's business. And the whole town was thinking about that one person. How many people do you think joined revivals just because it became something they had to do to become mayor? This is now a bunch of religious people. If I'm going to be mayor, I got to be religious too. Do you think it was just one guy? Or do you think it was about half of them? I don't believe in urgency. Because when we're anxious and when we're scared, we do our worst thinking. How much do you see Jesus comforting people, saying, you can chill, because I know that the Lord Jesus had confidence in himself. He doesn't have to push people. He doesn't have to make them scared. Any man with a rational mind, a full stomach, and a well-slept night will see who Jesus is. Wonderful. There's no reason to rush people. You see him feeding people. He's not using their hunger. All right, beating a dead horse. What's my point here? This is what I want you guys to understand. This is my vision for the evangelism for this church, and it's going to take years. Excited. We have all the time in the world. Some of you may not feel that way about yourselves and your own lives. Not much I can do about that. But I'm telling you, this church ain't going anywhere. And the contributions you've made won't be forgotten. The things you've done will continue to be the old treasuries that we will bring out all the time. I don't know if the revivals were 100% authentic, but they created some cool stuff. And I'm not throwing it away. I'm not a big fan of the anxious bench. I am a big fan of the invitation. When after the sermon, and it has been made very clear to me that disciples culture, after the sermon, there is an invitational. That's fine. That's a good idea. Another thing disciples are unique for. For Protestant church, we take communion every Sunday. That's scandalous for a bunch of people who don't think communion doesn't. I mean, we don't believe in communion the way that some, like Catholics or Lutherans, do. We think about communion exactly more like Baptists kind of do. It's not magic. That's just bread. That's just juice. It's faith that gives it meaning and power. But we still do it every Sunday because we want to remember Christ. There are distinctives and traditions, old treasures we will bring out. And I want you to know there are so much more, there's so much more of that than anything else. I want you to know that you do have to know the difference between garbage and treasure. You can have confidence in that. If you're worried the church is going one way on something, like you're about to lose something precious, come talk to me. We're going slow. Come talk to me. When I made the announcement that I was going to wear robes, I had a lot of kind, wonderful people, real confused. Someone said, Daniel, that's not you. And I could hear, we're not going to lose that, like, new thing. We're not going to lose that change. No, guys. The robes are a gesture. I'm going to wear the robe because it helps take the temperature off. I want you to know that I do value you and what you love. I'm not throwing it away. I want you to look at it again, though. Is it new or is it old treasure? You are being trained for the kingdom. Every day you're learning something new. Even those of you who think you've got 5 years left, you are still better trained to think kingdom than you were yesterday. Don't be afraid to go into the garage and say, you know what? Someone else should have this joiner. Or, I will never use this bandsaw. I like all of my fingers. What is it in here for? It looks rad. That's half the reason I have it. I drag that thing from Quincy. It's all treasure. Some of it's new, some of it's old. Some of it will serve a purpose. And I want you to know something. Maybe in 20 years we'll look at old treasure and we'll realize, hey, actually, that fits right now really well. Let's bring that out. Let's get to work on it. You know, I have an idea for a really poorly made chair. Let's use that bandsaw. I don't know. But there's a difference between hoarding, because hoarding is about anxiety. Hoarding is about fear. Hoarding. H-O-A-R-D. I really gotta worry. I gotta hit that D on that, huh? There's a difference between hoarding. Boy, that's awkward. I'm sorry.
Hoarding.
You got yourself into it now. Listen, don't. You know what I don't have to talk about the other thing. You know better. All right. So then let's go to invitation. And let me invite you Let me summon you to joy, to love, to kindness. Let's saunter to the table and enjoy our meal. Can I mention something? Urgency. It's not a mistake that the clock is the thing I think about most. And when I'm up here, I get anxious. I feel pressed and pushed. Now, I respect your time. We have people taking care of kids. I get that the difference between 5 more minutes and 10 more minutes is quite exceptional when you are taking care of 2-year-olds. They're the reason I care about this clock. But there is nothing happening after this service more important than communion. Nothing. And if you have an issue, if you struggle, if we're getting to 10:40 and you're thinking, oh, but I gotta be blank. Why did you schedule blank after church? If you could be here, if you have time for it, then come, enjoy it, be here, be with us, be with Christ. But don't come in here with that outworld. Don't bring that baggage in here. This is a place of peace. That being said, join me. If you're ready, let's stand. We'll sing this hymn. We'll take our time.